For August the 21st, 2015, we talk about Fig, Heroes of the Storm, and we ask you which games give you the Tetris effect, besides Tetris. Welcome to the 117th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hey, Ben, welcome back.
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going good. We're happy to have you here.
Sorry I was away. I was just boycotting the podcast until you start playing The Witcher 3.
Oh, yeah. August is not the month to take a stand on that, Ben. It really isn't.
I came back.
It's fine. The hunger strike. You know who you were starving in the hunger strike? Our listeners.
Me. Oh, sorry. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. We got a late start, so I don't want to get an awful lot of banter in, but I want to ask you, how was Cincinnati?
Well, you know, because you saw me, but it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. the rest of my time there was as great as well.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. Was Cole like your bodyguard? I was about to ask. Did he follow you around the entire time?
No. I saw him at the beginning.
I mean, not that he knew.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I was going to get into that later, but yeah. Cool. Well, yeah, I'm excited to talk about the thing we did when you were here. But let's get rolling into it. We've got the usual trifecta of features here. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we're going to start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. Does anybody have a story they want to volunteer to go first?
I have two fairly small stories.
Okay.
First off, apparently in the spirit of Twitch Plays Pokemon, someone tried Twitch Plays Dark Souls.
Yeah, Twitch can't play Dark Souls.
Yeah, that's just the entire title of the article is Twitch can't play Dark Souls. apparently they're still in the Undead Asylum, not the second time around, the first time.
Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine trying to walk along that walkway to get back to it.
Yeah, they've broken their weapon. Their only weapon. just in general, I'm not sure you could Twitch plays a Twitch-based game in general, but especially not Dark Souls.
it doesn't make intuitive sense. I want to see Twitch plays Bayonetta.
Oh jeez. What I want to see is like a count of how many hours the individuals watching this have spent on it. Like who are the most invested people? Who's just determined to make this work?
I think you would have to like have some kind of software running on the machine that actually showed when that window was active. Like when they're in there actually typing, or to kind of extrapolate a certain number of minutes around each command that goes in, because I know that there are people who just leave this on in a tab on a second screen, and you know do their work while that happens off to the side.
So it's basically like only the NSA knows.
I suppose, yeah. I think that there is a lot of clusters that are crunching this data, and we're never gonna get out from under it. Yeah. Yeah, it's goofy. I'm going to be curious to see what they go to next. I think that the next logical step up from Pokemon would have been Final Fantasy VII. You know,
oh, sure.
Still something kind of turn-based, something that you know they can wander around. It is a step up in technical execution, but it's still effectively a 2D game. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I could see maybe some of the more zany like. Japanese RPGs / visual novel type things could be fun.
I don't know about visual novel, but yeah, like just get like Saga Frontier or something.
Yeah.
Huh.
How easy is it to screw yourself really bad in Final Fantasy VII? Like if you keep on dying over and over again, do you start losing experience or lose all your money and can't resurrect or...
I'm sure there would be some kind of like rogue faction that would try and make it so that you save with no items and like one HP. You know?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. I could see getting there. But if that's not the case in Pokemon, when you can save at any time, then maybe there's a countermeasure against it.
Yeah, you could do like the first Mega Man Battle Network game, because you start each fight with full HP.
Hmm. Yeah, there are a couple of JRPGs like that. What was your other story, David?
So, Donald Trump, notable hair aficionado, and one of 300 Republican candidates for president, was at the Iowa State Fair giving small children rides in his helicopter.
Because, of course he was.
According to the youth vote, of course.
Yeah, I do feel like that there has now been a bar set for, like, kissing babies.
he just goes around endangering babies in the flyover states. Literally flying them over the states.
So it was caught on film that while he was doing this, one small child asked him if he was Batman, to which he responded that he was in fact Batman.
Mm.
And in response to this, Kevin Conroy, who is the voice of Batman in all of the Arkham games, also as apparently everything else that's not live action.
Yeah, he's like the Back to the Animated series. Like he is Batman.
Yeah,
In terms of the number of hours of entertainment made by a person as Batman, he is Batman.
He's more Batman than anyone else.
Yes, he reached the Batman tipping point.
Yeah, so he apparently tweeted in response to this, make it clear that that Trump is not Batman. So mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully, there you go.
Hopefully it got back to that little kid. I mean, if he had any self-awareness, he would say, I'm not Batman, I'm more like a Batman villain. the less said about that asinine man, the better. Go ahead.
I don't know. I've now the why some good that's come out of this is I've now like looked into Kevin Conroy, and it's pretty badass.
I think I shared this anecdote on the show before, but he was one of the not like a first responder, but in the week or so following the 9/11 attacks, he was down on down rescuing people, like doing legitimate heroic work, and really? He was talking and somehow it came up that like, oh, I'm Batman, and yeah, Batman was down there helping people out of the wreckage and families and stuff like. Yeah, it was, I forget exactly what everybody did because, there are more important things to worry about at the time. But, right. But yeah, Batman, helped people on 9/11.
At this point, it is his job to be Batman in all that he does.
Right. Oh, man. Just the other day, he punched somebody out to just beat him to within an inch of his life.
Wait, Kevin Conroy?
Oh, yeah.
For
all
what?
All the time. No, I'm not. I'm just
okay. I was gonna say.
No, David said that he.
I got it. I followed.
Yeah, don't you listen to the disclaimer? Everything we say is parody and satire.
Gotcha. No,
okay. We can't be held accountable for anything.
The homeschooler has trouble picking up on sarcasm. It's a thing. So.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. Huh. Yeah. Huh.
Well, yes.
So. good for Kevin Conroy. If Trump gets elected president, he'll try and deport him. Okay.
I
So speaking of Batman, I have a story that is kind of related to that.
Okay.
So it's just about DLC for Arkham Knight that was released today and was announced for next month.
Mm-hmm.
So today they released DLC, and basically this is the same fashion of all the other Arkham games where they're releasing skins, new challenge maps, and they're releasing one side quest for, I think, Nightwing. But they are also releasing the 1989 Batmobile as a skin, which sounds kind of cool. That sounds like more of an upgrade than previous games, since you mm-hmm. can drive around in it. They also announced that they're going to be releasing a skin of the Tumbler next month from The Dark Knight.
I don't think it, I was reading some stuff in the Slack chat earlier. I forget who said it, but it just passed by. I don't think that you can go into tank mode in the 1989 1989. I feel like I said something about the 19th century just there. That's so weird. in the 89 Batman, when I think you just see it's just car mode, which rules out roughly 70% of that game.
Well, yeah, I guess you can only use it after you've beaten the game, maybe.
Mm.
So I wonder how they handle that, because like there'd have to be some way for it to transform into car mode, unless it just kind of suddenly becomes a different Batmobile, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is there like a garage to change out cars?
No, like the way tank mode works, you just like you snap into it and snap out of it. Like it hovers. It goes from being on wheels to hovering, and like it pops a turret out. Like it's really. Pops a turret out.
It's kind of like Star Fox when you can switch from flying straight to battle mode if you have that ability. That's kind of like what the Batmobile is like.
God, I'm looking at pictures of that 89 Batmobile. That is a cool car.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Huh. Sorry. I'm looking at it and I'm like all of a sudden getting memories of like having a Batman like Happy Meal toy from like Batman Returns times.
Mm-hmm.
And like you'd like drag it back. It was like I think it was like a legit like Hot Wheels collab with Warner Brothers on Batman to release that thing.
Did it break into three pieces so you could fit through the alley?
No, I forget that scene from that movie. Is that a thing?
That's a thing.
Oh yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen 89 Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
That was a Batman Returns thing.
It's been even longer since I've seen that.
Yeah,
I feel like the original Batman is on television more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just have a better chance of catching it. Just like
the original Batman, meaning the cartoon?
No, I mean the Tim Burton 89 Batman,
the original reboot. Okay.
Yes, so I realized I was
with lots of black lights
and the Prince song.
So good. You know, Prince song.
The majority Prince soundtrack, I think. God, that was such a weird movie.
Yep.
Dennis, how about your story?
Yeah, so I searched for, I was desperately searching for anything that looked interesting to me other than this. But I'm just going to play into the stereotype. I'm going to be Hearthstone guy tonight. One of these days I'll say it right. But so there was a kind of file found in the new patch that hit Hearthstone that suggests the potential for two-player matches. And that's not two players versus each other like they have right now, but two-player co-op matches in some form. So the audio suggests that you've defeated a boss together, something called the Gearmaster Mechazod. So that could be cool. However, that's really the only reference to it. It's in a test file, so it could be just that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very intriguing. So people are speculating right now, is it something that's going to show up just as one of their weekly events that will go away? And if so, that seems like a lot of work to do, you know, kind of setting up the platform for co-op play if they're only going to use it and then discard it after a week. Or, you know, could it be that there's actual further implementation of this coming, which opens up a whole world of possibilities? Because they've kind of really carefully designed the game so that cards that in combination would make the game broken, like just straight up broken,
right,
are separated out by class, and you can't get those game-breaking combinations.
Right.
So this would make it really easy to kind of reverse that. And set it up so that you could do some pretty crazy things.
But how does that work when your opponent can do the same thing?
I don't know. Everyone will just break the game all the time.
Yeah, and so it's just a matter of who finds the most advantageous way to break the game against the people that you're playing against.
I guess, yeah.
And like, what if the meta gets so solidified that everybody rolls the same combination? It's just some kind of weird stalemate. It's the same kind of battle, but the numbers just get bigger.
Yeah, you just force teams. Wait, to be so you in mean
World
class.
Of Warcraft?
Maybe
to both of those things. Yeah, forcing teams to be the same class could be interesting. Yeah, it just raises a lot of questions. And again, this is a test file. It could be nothing. We could never hear about it again. But kind of interesting.
The other possibility, you know, it could be, say, like, co-op versus, you know, a, you know, say, a boss. You know, something computer controlled that's, you know, completely outside of the competitive metagame.
Oh, yeah, and for reference, yes, the sound files specifically reference a boss.
Oh,
so that seems to be it. My speculation. I'm already a level deeper than that. my speculation. I've waved past that, and into. So why would they kind of go to the trouble to make the game set up for co-op? Just like designing the interface for that alone, I don't even understand how they would do. Mm-hmm. Why would they go to all that trouble if they were then just going to toss it after a week?
Do you have an answer for that, or is that just the question that you're coming up with?
The only answer that I could come up with is it's easier to code that sort of thing than I perceive it to be.
Mm.
So I'm just not familiar enough with the technical side of things to say whether or not that would be hard.
Hmm.
It could be not now that they're owned by Activision.
They've always been owned by Activision.
Always?
I mean, at least since Hearthstone's creation. Like,
well, yeah. But yeah. I mean, now mm-hmm. that Blizzard's owned by Activision, they have to, you know, have a requisite amount of evil, and they're playing the long game.
How was two player co-op evil?
Oh no, getting rid of two player co-op.
Oh, okay. So yeah, they're building the sandcastle for the kid before they kick it down.
Hmm.
Yeah.
We shall see.
Hmm. I've got a story here too. Sorry, guys. I'm carrying us through this. Our late start really got to me. cool. So just today, as of when we are recording this, there is a new Kickstarter type service, crowdfunding kind of thing in the world. This is something created by Justin Bailey, which it's really hard to believe that a game developer's name is Justin Bailey, but here we are. Kind of seems like a joke or a code name, but anyway. started a service called Fig, which is named after the Hotel Figuera, which is kind of like an unofficial social hub spot for developers at E3 that doesn't just allow people to back a game and get t-shirts and, you know, names in the credits and what have you. It's Kickstarter plus the opportunity to buy equity.
Yeah, that's intense.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. And this is something that has been an argument against Kickstarter, you know, for a while. Like, you are just giving them the money because it's something that you want to see exist. That is good. But for a lot of people, it feels like, okay, well, why wouldn't you just buy it after the game comes out? Especially with these bigger projects that we've seen that kind of are pretty much guaranteed to get funding, whether it is from the campaign itself or from external sources. You know, mm-hmm. like you like basically you are volunteering everything with nothing to get in return except for the thing that you are paying for, maybe, right? It's a weirdly altruistic kind of thing if it's not being treated as a storefront. Yes. So there are some pretty cool people on the board here, such as Tim Schafer. Brian Fargo, who's a guy who has like a bunch of successful Kickstarters under his belt. Like he had like Wasteland 2 here pretty recently.
Oh, wow.
You know, just like helping consult on these and, you know, and get them there and get them out and get them funded. And, you know, they're sitting on this. And the idea is like for the first couple of times, I guess there's something called like a, I don't know, like a registered investor or a certified investor, something like that. Like you have to have like over $1 million in net assets before you're allowed to play. But the idea is like, if you want to dig into this as a regular person, after everything is kind of like tested out, you give money for an equity stake in the company. And if that game takes off, you know, you will get whatever percentage of that back from the profits and a revenue share.
So does this mean that like the minimum donation or minimum buy-in is like $20,000 or something crazy like that?
I have no idea. Like I don't even know how you would evaluate like what a game would be worth, like, because what a game costs to make, which is ostensibly what the Kickstarter model is based around. That's what you set your budgets around. If you're smart, you include tax and you include all of the labor and you include, you know, anything involved in, you know, shipping and fulfilling all of the things for the Kickstarter, like to create it. But that's not the valuation of that thing, because obviously it's going to go on and, you know, get money beyond that. So how do you decide, like, here's what it's, you know, going to cost and here's our expected return? And well, then go ahead.
Don't you do it the same way you do with any other startup where you sell equity?
Just take a guess. I mean, like, there are a bunch of different ways that you can figure that out. It's based on, like, cash flow, but, like, a lot of these are probably just there's no real, I don't know, it doesn't seem like there's a comparison for them to, like, extrapolate how this thing is going to do. Unless I'm really, really wrong about how startups get their funding.
No, I don't think you're too far off base. It's just, I'm interested because, you know, I've seen people talking on the internet. Mike Bethel, who just launched his second game, talking about just how, you know, those kind of indie darlings are the exception to the rule. And 99% of the people who make an indie game, even a successful indie game, are just making, you know, enough to get by on top of that. So I'm curious as to, you know, how this is structured differently from Kickstarter, so that it won't saddle someone with kind of, hey, I got enough money to, you know, pay my next year of rent, but now I've all of a sudden got to pay out equity to 6,000 people who backed me.
Right. Yeah.
That's just like 6,000 transactions of a penny each for their share. Like, that adds up.
And it's a revenue share too. So, I mean,
oh, really?
Yeah. So it's not even like a profit or a total value. Like, when I think of buying equity in a company, I think of having something that I can in turn sell back to them or sell to somebody else. Like, this is super weird. Can I sell my share to somebody at that valuation? Or is there some kind of weird short selling? Or do you just kind of, like, is this all codified within the system to where you just hold on to it and then you get whatever, like a portion of what they put
in? It's like a co-op.
Maybe, kind of, but, like, do they get to decide, like, man, will people from Fig get a majority stake in this? Like, I have no idea. Like, is there only a small portion they're going to allow? What if somebody wants to come in and do, like, an angel investment? Like, so many questions, guys.
Yeah, this strikes me as like, what the big, problems I hear with Kickstarter is the idea that, you know, in some of these games, particularly some of the, like, you know, more niche and nostalgia games, by the time the Kickstarter's done, they've already sold the game to everyone who's interested in buying it.
Yeah.
And this seems like this just kind of exaggerates that, because, you know, at that point, even if you find other people who are interested in buying it, you've already sold all that profit. So this in some way just seems like it's even worse than Kickstarter.
So I'm scrolling down for, what game is this here? Outer Wilds.
Yeah,
which
that's
is the
kind
game
of
that's pitched
test
on their site.
Yeah.
I'm up to $5,000 investments. And it still says nothing about equity. So $10,000, nothing, and that's the top level. So it's really, so even in their poster child for this, there is nothing in here about profit sharing or equity.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not profit, it's revenue.
Or yeah, that.
That's a huge difference.
Presumably.
There's a trip to space, or excuse me, an astronomy-filled adventure. Which is almost like a trip to space.
I mean, looking up at the sky during the daytime is an astronomy adventure. You got to make your own fun sometimes. Go ahead, David.
Go ahead.
Well, I feel like, you could probably do, you know, I am not an investment banker, so maybe I'm totally got this wrong. But, you know, isn't kind of one of the things that, like, mutual funds and stuff like that will do is, you know, No one normal person can afford a share of stock, so you just aggregate lots and lots of people to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, couldn't someone do the same thing with this? You know, create some sort of vehicle for, lots of people to come together and buy shares of the revenue.
Well, you got to diversify your portfolio. You can't just put all your eggs in the MOBA basket. You got to have some roguelikes over here. You got to have some Souls-alikes over here. You know, just I got to tell you, these clicker futures are off the hook. You got to get on the ground floor.
I do look forward to the to the day when we have the Mad Money guy like screaming about game development.
A thousand YouTubers just went, my time has come.
they're at dinner with their family and their phone beeps. They look at it, their kids talking about their homework or how they think the teachers. He just gets a glassy-eyed look at their face and gets up. Honey, honey, where are you going? Daddy, daddy. Why are you putting on that fedora?
Also, another question. Would we then become, would this stop being like a video game store show and de facto become like an investment show?
I hope not.
I'm not sure it's even in our hands anymore. If this happens, we are by definition an investment show.
I guess. I mean, you know, if this thing doesn't. Oh man, if this thing doesn't get a 7 on Metacritic, it's so weird.
That's you know, fixing the reviews is the new insider trading.
yeah.
Ben, you have any thoughts on this?
No, not really.
Attaboy.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, the section where we interact with you, the listeners, by asking a question. You are kind enough to respond. Dennis, what is the question you asked the nice people?
Yeah, the question was about Tetris Syndrome, which is not just for Tetris. I've often found myself playing a game in my head long after I've turned it off, so I thought I'd see what other games like that are out there. So whether reliving past decisions or planning your next attempt or just pondering the lore, what games do you find yourself playing in your head long after you've turned them off?
And I'll pick up first here with Brian, who writes in saying, lately, Tales of Maj Ayal, I believe that's how that's pronounced, the combination of permadeath with a talent system for character progression and a relatively static quest order meant that I have spent hours over the past month planning new character builds and deciding where to go to maximize my chances of winning. But I won for the first time last week, so it all paid off.
Nice.
I have no idea what this game is.
I'm looking at images from it, and it kind of looks like a pixel art roguelike type of deal. I don't know.
I will have to look into this as, Ben, you read the next response.
Murph Murphy says, when I was younger, I played Goblins, Three Eyes, so long I was solving puzzles in my dreams.
Again, I don't know what Goblins.
Oh, it really does have three eyes.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
I'm just opening up tab after
tab.
Lots
of goblins have three eyes.
Well played.
Oh, goblin bio truths. It looks like Lemmings a little bit.
It reminds me of there was a game called Creatures at the library, which like simulated evolution down through generations.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, it would remember genetic information from the different parents and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the like one that was like a borderline zero player game?
A little bit, yeah. It was like you set up like a dollhouse with little gremlins in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You theoretically had to defend them from like attacking species, but survival of the fittest, you know, you don't want to interfere too much.
Yeah. Who are you, God? David, what does David say?
David said, MMOs have always come with some extra homework for me. Planning out the order I get gear, researching skill rotations or boss strategies, or poking at lore bits on the forums. FF14 is very nice for the last point, being so story-heavy. It's often filled my idle moments where I can't be playing.
Yeah, MMOs, that's gonna go into mine in a big bad way.
Yeah, and David, it's impolite to poke at someone's lore bits. Leave those alone.
Let's see here. Dennis, what does Sean say?
Sean says, I'm going to throw out an answer that the Duck Feed Network will never see coming. The Souls games. currently, Bloodborne is the title of choice, but I'm pushing 2 years of almost nonstop Souls daydreaming. At the moment, I was I'm doing an arcane run, and while I'm at work, I find myself thinking about what sequence I need to play through the game to get the items I want as fast as possible, while also imagining what impact that will have on the NPC storylines I'm trying to follow. In addition to all of this, the indirect storytelling of these games leads me to dwell on small details I saw after a session. My big one right now is trying to figure out what is going on with the design of the Winter Lanterns, but I won't go into detail here. That's for another show. The more unique answer, I'm actually going to throw out a board game called Kermit.
Kemet?
Or Kemet. There you go, Kemet. It's a territory control Euro-style game played out by taking turns and selecting actions to take. Combine this with the grid of synergistic special powers that you can purchase, and it becomes an instant daydream fodder. It is a very tight design game that heavily promotes long-term strategizing, and every time I play, I find myself thinking about what I could have done differently and what combinations of powers I could purchase the next time I play.
Hmm.
Some good stuff there.
Yeah.
And we are like 4 for 4 almost on games that I've never heard of before being this addictive. So brought out some deep cuts here.
Yeah, there's some good some good stuff like that throughout this whole response. I think people obsess about things that we don't care about, which is very hard for me to wrap my mind around. Don't care about right now. No, I'm interested, but I don't know. You like to think that your domain is your world entire. Yeah, Dark Souls seems to me to be one of those things where you kind of hold the entire game in your head.
Mm-hmm.
As you play it, like you know, like just the process of playing it is these tight little loops of retreading the same ground over and over and learning it, and so you get to thinking about how everything interlocks, not just spatially but sequentially. Yeah, I can totally see that. Like I for 2 years, like Dark Souls in a big bad way, that was the case for me.
A good thing you're over it now.
No, I've just codified it. I found a place to put those notes to use. And once you've committed this stuff to, you know, digital vinyl or whatever, digital tape, whatever it is we do here, there's a little bit of finality behind it. I haven't played Dark Souls in a long time. The original Dark Souls.
So it's like when a alcoholic becomes a bartender. He's healthy now.
Yeah. He's got his friend, the postman who nobody likes. There's the other alcoholic who everybody knows. Everybody has an opinion about everybody at that bar. It's really weird. Sarcastic. Mm. I was watching Cheers recently, guys. Could you tell?
Sorry, never seen it.
What? You've never seen Cheers?
Nope.
Oh my God.
Wait, how does this surprise you? We've basically established.
I know we have, but that's unconscionable. Dennis, you've seen Cheers, right?
I've seen episodes of Cheers.
Okay.
Would you be okay if David saw Frasier instead?
Kinda. And Frasier's also great.
Also David, something I have not seen.
I tried.
You guys, there is more even worthwhile media out there than we will ever be able to consume in our lives.
I know. I'm not trying to make you feel bad, David. It's just so strange to me. Huh.
No, my point is, what are we doing recording a podcast? We should be consuming more.
What am I done with my life?
This making's for suckers. Making is for suckers. Huh. Let's see here. Tanner writes in saying, the recently released final version of Brutal Doom has given me ample excuse to be knee-deep in the dead yet again. Every now and again, my mind idles. I catch myself running the maps in my head. Key locations, doors, enemy placements, weapon placements, etc.
Nice.
Guys, after Paper Mario, we're playing Doom 2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Nice.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know about Brutal Doom, but again, continuing the streak of stuff that I didn't know about.
Yeah,
what is Brutal Doom in relation to Doom?
Like a fan remake or a revamp or something?
They could be separate entities too.
Mm.
Well, separate I feel incidents. Like the number of allusions he made to Doom would suggest they're at least somewhat related.
gameplay mod created in 2010, so I guess it's been in development since then.
Cool.
Huh. Let's see here. Ben, what does Brandon say?
Brandon says XCOM, the first game I recognize. when it first came out, any time not playing it was spent reading the wiki for beginner tips, and thinking about how I could have saved the brave Irishman, Anish Pops Daz.
Poor Seamus McO.
This has to be your answer, Dennis, right?
I thought about it, but I have this weird relationship with XCOM where I get lost playing it in my head while I am still playing it.
Yeah. Hmm.
And a point comes up where I can only, you know, I have to pick which research to start on next, and both of them are going to take a while, and I can only choose one. So I'm starting to think about, okay, well, if I do this research, I can go do this, and that means I should buy this next, and that means that then I'll have this for my soldiers, which means I can probably then do this mission that I've been saving up until I'm powerful. And I get so far down that rabbit hole, so many decisions made at the head or made in my head, mm-hmm. that then all of a sudden I'm staring at the screen.
You're playing
and going,
the game at the toilet.
Yeah. But all of a sudden I'm staring at the screen and going, what was the original decision I was trying to make? Yeah. Like I made so many choices on top of that one without even actually making it that now I've got to backtrack and figure out, you know, where I was in reality to begin with.
Should we kickstart you a whiteboard?
Yeah, I feel like XCOM is a great game for that, like you just accidentally leave your mind wandering on the strategies and, you know, come back a couple of hours and realize you've just been sitting there.
Yep. So, although my real answer, I don't know if you want me to jump into my real answer.
Oh, you can save it for the end if you want to.
Yeah, I'll save it. It's a short one, but it's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. David, what does Franz say?
Franz says, I'll second the Souls games. Before that, it was Jagged Alliance 2. Pondering strategies and teams helped me through many a boring class. XCOM fanatics who haven't tried that game yet should really give it a shot.
Well, there we go.
I love the art in Jagged Alliance 2, if it's the same game I'm thinking of.
Is that at all related to, like, Fragile Alliance?
I don't know.
Again, a game I've never heard of.
Yeah. Or the much weirder Fraggle Alliance.
Oh, man, you have all the different factions built right in. It's so great. Huh.
Guys, when are we going to get our dark and gritty Fraggle remix?
Just be like The Wire, all the different factions within Fraggle Rock. Man, we're all just, they're all playing the game, you know? Mm-hmm.
Huh. I just as a lark googled Fraggle Alliance and stumbled upon a page advocating that Wash from Firefly is a Fraggle.
Oh, that's just silly.
I'm not even sure.
Dennis, what does Steven say?
Steven says, at the risk of making this sound like a support group meeting, I also think about Dark Souls on a daily basis. Yes,
I think I know what show got them into the network.
Yeah, right? but for real, one game I couldn't put out of my mind was Metal Gear Solid 2. Hmm. This is by far my favorite in the series, and when I wasn't playing, I was thinking about the layout of Big Shell, which I still have memorized, trying to play through different scenarios in my head to come up with strategies to make it through the game on the next Euro Extreme difficulty. Also, naked cartwheels.
Guys, since the episode... Go ahead.
Is that a separate thing, or can you do that in Metal Gear 2?
You can do that in Metal Gear Solid 2.
All right,
guys. I need to talk about this because we don't bring it up on the show. Huh. So the episode about Zone of the Enders, Watch Over Fireballs, came out yesterday, as of when this comes out. Instead of doing a sketch, we open the episode by talking about the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo that shipped with Zone of the Enders. And it starts out, you think it's going to be a sketch, but it goes on for 40 minutes.
You're
wow.
Talking about the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo.
To be fair, that was probably the experience of 90% of the people who played that
yep.
game.
It was Gary's idea. He texted me at like 3 a.m. the day before. I was like, yeah, I can dig that up. I'll play it.
I just all I remember from that is how weird Japanese Snake's voice sounded to me.
Yeah, Japanese Otacon isn't a ninny.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it just the conclusion I drew was that like voice to stereotype mapping apparently does not cross cultural boundaries.
And there's only one David Hayter until there's a Kiefer Sutherland, and there the two shall meet. Let's see here. Unless the rumors I'm hearing are true.
Wait. Are we talking 2024 Metal Gear Solid crossover? Because I would play that game so hard.
Metal Gear 24? Hello?
Konami has to make games again before that happens. Let's see here. I will pick up with Gordon, who says, Kerbal Space Program. My work notes are dotted with new designs for spaceships. There's always a way to optimize an existing design or come up with some wacky new system for building a vast interplanetary nuclear-powered supership to transfer a space station to the Jupiter analog and support landings on all the moons there. Sorry, I got tripped up because he spelled moons a moon with two O's instead of with a U, like it is in Kerbal.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
I like to believe that by all the moons there, he means literally every moon in existence. You know,
I think you misheard me. I think you heard me say, bring me a lot of moons.
Yeah. Have any of you guys actually played Kerbal?
Yeah, I can't breach it at all.
I haven't.
Yeah, that seems like a game I should like that I just haven't played at all. Like, it's kind of like Minecraft to me.
Yeah, Minecraft is a pretty good analog because I know for sure that there are a lot of like tutorial how to get started in so and so kind of stuff, like content on YouTube. I don't know, man. I there's not room for my there's no room for that.
It's not like it's rocket science.
I was just talking with a friend who is like working on a program to a computer program to automatically develop Kerbal spaceships to spec.
Nice.
Huh. Let's see here. Ben, what does Ricardo say?
Ricardo says Crusader Kings 2. If you set up an actual goal, you'll be in it for a while, even when you're not actually playing. Right now, I'm trying to find the best way to reform the Germanic faith in Holy War, West Europe. And,
I think Holy War is a verb in this.
Yes, I think it is.
Yeah. Holy
Which
War,
I
West
approve
Europe.
Of.
Before the Mughals reach my borders.
Before Donald Trump reaches them. Oh, Mongols. No, Donald Trump and Mark Cuban are at the gates.
Hashtag Viking Lord problem.
That's pretty great. I just imagine playing Crusader Kings 2 while listening to Hardcore History. That sounds pretty fun to me. Let's see here. David, what does Jala say?
Jala says, previously on Dragon Ball Z, Morrowind, Azure Dreams, currently Leviathan, the last day of the decade. Obviously, my choices have less to do with RTS-type strat perfection and a lot more to do with exploration or lore. It's not that I don't play games which require strategy. I'm just more interested in stories, worlds, and new experiences than I am in being the chess mastermind. I'd imagine that I'm pretty terrible at RTSs because I can scrape by to see the next thing. I'm Cthulhu, which is presumably the much cooler, Dark Lord of reality. The close calls are generally the most fun due to the uncertainty.
Yeah. I think that to a certain extent, a lot of RTS single player campaigns are meant for that kind of play. They're not really asking you to do really high level play. It's more for scenario design and stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. At least in my experience, I think I'm very similar to Jala in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, I know that I've gone at least somewhat through a couple of RTS games and that my gameplay in no way resembles high level play. So
let's see. Dennis, what does Joshua say?
Joshua says, almost any game I play gets some extra time from the old memory banks. However, there are few that get me to do any serious additional research or get me thinking of different ways to approach a particular mission or level. Some that come to mind are World of Warcraft, Vainglory, XCOM, and most tactics games I've played. Some of it was lore-related, but mostly it was to find new ideas for playstyles to build optimization.
Yeah. So pretty much the opposite of what Chalice said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Vainglory sounds vaguely familiar.
That is an iOS, I believe it's only iOS, MOBA type game. But that was, it was marketed pretty heavily around the launch of, I believe, the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus to kind of show off what the graphical capabilities of those phones were.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't know how it is. There's a guy at work who really enjoys it. He plays it with his kids.
You know, I tried in iOS MOBA before I knew what a MOBA was, and I can't for the life of me remember what the game was or if it's still alive and kicking. But I remember, like, you know, as I realized MOBA, what MOBAs were many, many years, months, whatever later, being like, oh, okay, I've done something exactly like this before. I didn't know that's what that was.
You had developed
that's probably
the antibodies.
Why I failed so much. Yeah.
Huh.
Cool.
Jonathan writes in saying, I'm not sure if this gets at the question, but games with multiplayer or co-op components usually have me thinking about them long after I've played them. The interaction with other players, especially if it's uniquely done, a la the Souls series, have we hit our Souls games reference quota, can provide memorable stories. Along this vein, I used to play Arma 2 with a MilSim, military simulation group, fairly regularly that would provide amazingly immersive experiences that still come back to mind. Working alongside others in the midst of a firefight or setting up an ambush hits a sweet spot in gaming for me. More recently, my obsession has been with Rocket League, which, while it doesn't provide a unique multiplayer element per se, has me enjoying competing with others and thinking about improving my play when I'm not in the game. Truly, just flipping and flying your car around is great fun, but there's also a tactical level to uncover that's really enjoyably paired with the fantastically done physics.
Yeah, watching high-level Rocket League play is a thing of beauty.
It's funny, in the Slack channel, people have taken to, there's an emoticon for emoticon. How old am I? 50? There's an emoticon for a rocket and an emoticon for a car or emoji, whatever the fuck.
I believe it's a Bitmoji now.
Yes, I feel like you could maybe say a motocon.
No, I wouldn't. Boo this man.
But you could.
I liked it.
Yeah. But it sounds like Jonathan, if I'm going to get at the crux of this, really enjoys thinking about team dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, what does Gustavo say?
Gustavo says the closest thing I have to this was sadly not video game related, but rather Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Rolling around in bed, bridging, shrimping, doing lapel grabs on pillows, and rear naked chokes.
Doing lapel grabs on rear naked chokes?
on pillows and rear naked chokes. Yeah.
Huh.
I could see how, you know, a martial arts in real life could, you know, get in your head the same way that the fighting game could.
David?
I approve. Yeah,
go ahead.
I could see that, especially because, you know, BJJ is a really, really tactical, like, martial art. You know, it's, you know, because you're grappling, the actual, like, minute-to-minute action, you can, you know, slow it down a little bit and think. So it's more, it is kind of more the you know, strategy puzzle game of martial arts as opposed to being like the twitch shooter of martial arts. So I could see how that could really get into your head.
I have no knowledge, so I will defer to you.
Yeah. Good stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. David, what's Phil say?
Phil says, I can't name specific examples, but I do know that once I start seeing the game where I close my eyes, it's time to put it away. See, I feel like for me, that's the trap, because it's like, oh man, I'm way too tired, and like I've been playing this game all day. I need to just go to bed. And the end result of that is whatever it is I haven't resolved, I just spend the rest of the night like rehashing that 5 minutes of gameplay over and over in my head.
Consciously.
Huh?
Consciously?
Like half consciously. It's okay. It's like the whole like fever dream, waking dream type thing.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Just, you know, over and over again, you know, trying to keep, Slovenia from, you know, leaving the XCOM initiative.
Let's see here. Dennis, what does Christopher say?
Christopher says, very recently, life is strange. And I can't even talk about why, because super spoilers. but there's some serious decisions to be made in this game, and wondering how they will affect your past, present, and future, and wondering if I even made the right choice. Lots of doubts. And more currently, after the insane episode 4 climax, lots to think about as I wait for the final episode to be released.
God, I can't wait for the final episode of that to be released so I can play it.
So play the entire game, right? Not just the final episode.
Right.
Yeah. It's such a weird... At the same time, I can get the appeal. It's like, you know, it's like watching TV episodes as they premiere real time, week to week. Mm-hmm. But it's just such a weird place to be. You almost need to make sure that you've got someone around you who is playing the same game or at the same point.
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean?
Just story-wise, to sit and percolate on a game while you wait for the next episode of it to be released.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And not be able to go any further. And I imagine it's an additional level of weirdness because, you know, with a game that kind of conforms to your choices, like most of these adventure games do, you can't even really water cooler talk it with people because you could be having radically different experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, although I do feel like people got like a lot of water cooler talk out of like the Mass Effect series entirely because of the different experiences.
Sure, comparing notes. But then I wonder how much you wander into inadvertent spoilers when you're comparing notes on a game that hasn't really concluded yet.
Yeah.
I know, if it's a game about like, is it about time travel?
Ostensibly, yeah.
So can you really have spoilers?
I mean,
like, I feel like it's not spoilers, it's just meta.
The episodes come out chronologically, like they are linear in a way. I imagine that information is revealed at a steady rate.
Only if you're in a regular time continuum.
I'm going to wrap everything up here with Mikhail, who writes, StarCraft was my first, I think. My brain processing build orders free of the constraint of being tied to hands. or Turtles in Time way before that. Wow, those are two really different games, Mikhail. Mm-hmm. More recently, Souls games, especially if I go to bed stuck on an area or a boss, and Binding of Isaac, for which my brain-eye assemblage generates visions of item combinations and means of tackling that room which I just died in until I feel like a cheese-stuffed, lactose-intolerant bowel from all the viscera. Even more recently, Rocket League, because it has flying cars that play soccer. And let's be honest, I've been seeing those when I close my eyes since my first fever.
Yeah. Oh, that's
I
good.
Approve of this message.
Yeah. Isaac is a good one, just because it is random, and if you play enough of it, you kind of get a sense for how stuff fits together. And so you start dreaming weird combinations, just like when you have the Tetris dreams, like, where did those next blocks come from? Are you giving yourself advantageous blocks, or are you creating challenges for yourself?
Yeah.
Why won't you give yourself a line block?
Don't you believe in yourself?
My dreams are all line blocks.
Huh, there's
something deep there about, you know, the innate human nature to want conflict.
Mm-hmm. That's the fourth Z you've given yourself in a row. I think you're into self-sabotage. So, let's go through ours real quick, just because, again, ever mindful of the time. Dennis, you alluded to yours a little bit earlier, so I'm going to throw to you.
Yeah, I definitely have that, like, playing it when I'm half asleep element with Hearthstone, where just for some reason I'll be trying to figure out a way to clear a board and then all of a sudden realize it's just in my head. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. But the one that I'm going to reach back and pull out is Tony Hawk. When I was deep into those games on, like, PS1, just walking around the city, you know, every handrail, every inclined surface looked like a ramp, and it was just like every, you were kind of looking at everything in your life as though it were a skate park level.
Yeah.
And you're constantly imagining lines.
You were playing Hawk's Edge. Everything was being highlighted in red.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Hmm. So that one's probably the biggest case I can think of outside of actual testers of just like kind of just getting a different perspective on life because you've been playing a game so much.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Okay, so one cheat answer is Dr. Mario, the same way that a Tetris works. I got that from playing Dr. Mario. But then on top of that, there's one time I think in high school and I was playing GTA 3 like all day on a weekend. And I don't know if I told the story or not, but like I went out to get in my car and then immediately just started walking for the street to the nearest car that was parked, you know. Can't do that.
I've heard that before. That's amazing.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, after playing GTA for like 8 hours straight, you start to do that. But
you realize that like Jack Thompson just had an orgasm, right?
Oh, I don't want to think about old man orgasms. Old man orgasms up there on the corner, yelling at the kids.
So, but I also want to echo a previous sentiment where I think a lot of times I'll usually dwell on more strategy based games or, but a lot of times like board games or, like, so I'll play a board game online called Terra Mystica. And like a lot of times I'll often like analyze the strategy and perhaps even go so far as to get out a piece of paper and write down all the possible options of what I can do to do the optimal play. Mm. But
pretty good. I like that. I like the taking notes in the margin. Yeah. See, that's the funny thing about work. I've got everybody trained to think that me writing on index cards is work. But it could be anything I'm writing on those cards. Yeah. David, how about you?
Sure. I would say for me, like, to a certain degree, this is kind of my default, in that, you know, any game I sufficiently like very much becomes like I kind of tend to dive in head first, you know, it'll affect what I eat, you know, things I read, stuff like that. Not like in a weird way, but I mean, like, if, you know, like if I'm playing, say, like one of the Uncharted games, I'm you know, more likely to like go out and get ethnic food of like wherever it's at, or you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Kind of related to a previous question we had.
Yeah. Although I would say the biggest one for me is probably pretty much anything we do a interview on, because I have a tendency to not actually play the games we were supposed to play until like the week before, and then like cram the entirety of, you know, BioShock into a week, or the entirety of Spec Ops into like a weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cram jamming.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, to a certain degree, I actually kind of think there's some benefit to that, because it's, I don't know, it's weird. It's very much, you know, those games in particular are, because of that, they're things that, like, for a discrete part of my life were my life. And sure. I know they're very meaningful. I have very strong memories about them because of that.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel about like a lot of WoF stuff too. Hmm. Not that I cram. I've gotten better about not cramming, but
you don't cram jam.
No. So we slam jam, you know, as you do, but cram jamming. Yeah. No, it's not a, I'll go ahead and do mine. Kind of the one that's the closest to the surface of the mind is Rock Band, actually.
Hmm.
Just in terms of playing enough of it and kind of having a wish list in the back of your head about which Rock Band game, which songs you want to see surface in Rock Band eventually, makes it so that when you're just kind of listening to music for fun, or at least when I'm listening to music for fun, I will think, what would that guitar line look like? Or that, like, how would I visualize that drum? You know, right there. And this is even separate and distinct from that effect where if you're playing these rhythm based games where something's flying at you and then you look away, the entire world kind of swims.
Yeah.
This is more, you know, for a very long time, a lot of my music consumption had this visual component to it. And it's hard for me to shake that, even when I'm playing real guitar, this idea of stuff flying at me and me responding to it.
Did you ever play around with the actual, like, track editor in those games?
No, I really didn't. I was not able to make it do the thing I wanted it to do. I couldn't properly recreate what I was hearing in my head.
I gotcha. Yeah. But the you know, kind of actually creating the thing that's flying at you will amplify the effect that you're talking about for sure.
Yeah. And in my deepest, darkest EverQuest days, I would often dream about walking around in the places, but it wasn't like, here I am in Kelothin. This is actually me picturing the interface with the chat going on. You know, it was just me envisioning it. So, I was more accurately dreaming about me playing the game because it is so repetitive and all encompassing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for responding. I'm happy we got through all of your responses. If you want to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for those on Tuesday afternoons. And if you want to suggest one of these, go ahead and let us know or hit us up in the Slack channel if you are a Patreon backer. That is a cool place to be.
The grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, how about you? You've been away for a minute, so I want to throw to you first.
Yeah, so I have a few things. So one thing I wanted to mention is Fallout Shelter is now out for the Android. Mm. So good news for everybody with an Android. Bad news is it's not compatible with my phone.
Oh,
so,
man. What?
Yeah, I know. I have a super old phone, so it might be time to upgrade soon. But then the other game that I've been playing is I started a playthrough of Fallout New Vegas.
Hmm.
And so I guess I started playing it in anticipation for Fallout 4 coming out in October.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to do another run at an optimized character where I'm starting out with 9 intelligence and I'm trying to get to the implant section before I level up the first time so that I can get max out my intelligence and then max out my skill set. So I've started to do that. But
are you going to pursue one of the story paths that you haven't done before?
I might, but I typically always fold and make the same choices every time with that game.
Yeah.
What's your poison?
I guess spoilers are probably up on this game since it came out five or six years ago.
Yeah.
I always kill Mr. House because that's oddly satisfying, and then take over his robots, and then no matter who you side with, you always take over the Hoover Dam.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I have a hard time siding with a person who crucifies people on telephone poles. So.
Yeah, that's yeah. You wouldn't side with Randall Flagg.
Yeah.
So you started that like, are you succeeding at doing this crazy thing you've set out to do?
So I started with the character creation yesterday on this, and so I just tried to make the most hideous person because usually that's the most satisfying when you see slow motion vats.
Yeah.
And so imagine the color palette of Milhouse with. It's kind of like the yellow man from Sin City crossed with the Joker as far as facial appearance.
Nice.
So that has been fun so far. So I just I was doing research last night, and then I set up my character last night, and so now I'm in Good Springs.
Hmm.
So yeah.
Now, are you planning on playing the expansions? Because my understanding was if you were playing the expansions that you actually don't need to minimax nearly as much in order to max everything out.
I don't know. I haven't played them before, so we'll see.
Yeah. I'm ashamed to admit I have not played the Fallout New Vegas expansions either.
I actually never got around to beating the game. So
it's so good.
Yeah, I really need to. Also, my understanding is like they at the end of the game, they do like a fairly epic recap.
They do, yeah. Oh man, this just brings it up. So listener Nick Basile, he has been kind of like minimizing some of his stuff, and he heard me talking about wanting the collector's edition of Fallout New Vegas. Mm-hmm. He was like, "Oh, I was gonna get rid of it," so I paid him to ship it, and so now I have all of the tchotchkes that came with the collector's edition. So I've got the platinum chip and the cards and stuff.
Yeah. Nice.
So thank you very much, Nick. That was quite generous of you.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, is it holding up for you? I mean, this is a game you played for a bit. Are you just killing time until the next cool thing comes?
Basically killing time until the next video game that I want to play comes out.
Until the next Fallout comes.
Yeah. But yeah, either Fallout or Metal Gear. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's so soon, too.
When is Fallout previous plus one?
October 10th, I think.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Around that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then one other game I've been playing, I played Rocket League for the first time a couple days ago.
Oh.
And yeah, that's super satisfying. It is just cars playing soccer, but the controls are pretty great. You can have your cars jump and spin and like flick the balls and stuff. But it's a lot of fun. So I only played, I think, a couple rounds of it. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty intuitive to pick up. And yeah.
So I what?
I'm just picturing cars with legs growing out of the bottom of them. Like there's somebody inside who has they're Flintstoning it, but they have really long legs. They're just running around playing soccer like normal. I'm sorry. Go ahead, David. You were gonna say something valuable, sure. I think.
I watched a Let's Play of Rocket League, and it seemed like. It seemed like the game maybe would be difficult to be comprehensible in terms of, like, the person I was seeing didn't seem to be able to reliably hit the ball in a way that, you know, purposefully moved it towards the opponent's goal. Is that actually a thing?
Well, so one of the strategies kind of pick up on just like in a single game is you typically just want to move the ball towards the other end of the field. And then you want it to basically move back and forth in front of the goal. So around all the sides of the court, they're all rounded off. So you can have it kind of oscillate back and forth across the goal. And then you have one person drive full speed towards the goal to try and punt it in as it crosses. So in that sense, it's kind of similar to soccer, right? You want to kind of push it down the edges, get it across, and then have someone spike it in.
Sure. Yeah, I guess what I was saying is it seemed like a lot of times, like, you know, it would be in the air and you'd be like jumping to try to get it, but like getting it just right so that you don't fly under it or over it or just past it, seemed like something that might be difficult to pull off.
Yeah, it can be, especially if there are other people kind of scrambling for it.
Sure.
But yeah, but that's kind of part of the fun.
I suppose so, yeah. And I mean, I feel like, I feel like this could be kind of a thing, you know, like the first time I played Devil May Cry, it was awesome to just like run around and run up walls and crap. I feel like, you know, adding rockets to cars innately makes a fun game.
Well, I don't think the cars have any rockets that like shoot out. They just.
Oh, no, I mean like rocket engines on a car.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, that's one of the fun parts about the game too, is the very start of it. It's very much like dodgeball, where you'll have people just speed towards the center, and it's kind of like a mad dash for who can hit the ball first. And if you time it correctly, if you jump your car right before you get to the middle, then you can beat out the other person for hitting the ball, because you'll hit the middle of it before they'll hit the bottom of it.
Ah, I see.
Huh. Yeah.
Sounds like some XFL stuff.
Whoa. Yeah. Sorry, that's the first time anybody said XFL in 15 years. Good for you.
They should make a franchise out of that in video games every year. Release a new XFL.
I think there was an arena football game for a little while, like 1 or 2 years.
Yeah. Huh.
Starring Herschel Walker, the man who's good at everything.
I don't know what that means. Is that a thing?
Yeah,
I don't know who Herschel Walker is.
Yeah, he was a guy who he was a professional football player, including in arena football. And then he decided to try to become a sprinter on the U.S. Olympic team and nearly made it, but didn't quite. So instead, he joined the U.S. Olympic bobsled team. And then, like, after that, at, like, the age of 50, he became a professional mixed martial artist.
So he's like if Deion Sanders chose the least popular sports he could. That's funny. I'm looking up. There was an arena football game that came out in 2006 that, boy, oh, boy, this soundtrack is full of winners, such as Avenged Sevenfold, Korn, Stained, and Under Oath. So there we go.
Is arena football, like, associated with, like, heavy metal headbanging type of stuff?
I wouldn't even call this heavy metal. This is, like, new metal, rap metal shit.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I just, like, that says everything you need to know about.
It's like whoever was on the team and deciding the soundtrack, like, really had an affection for that kind of music.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, it's, like, this was, like, the 90s. Isn't that... That seems like the music.
This is 2006.
Never mind. Yeah. What the hell?
It's basically the 90s.
You know, the 90s didn't happen all at once everywhere. The 90s are still going on some places.
The 90s.
Okay, let me rephrase this. That would make sense if this was the 90s, because at least judging by high school, that was like everything.
Hmm.
I was going to say, I don't think it would make sense if it was the 90s, because it would be all these bands from the future.
Future music. Yeah. Stained, this is your cousin. let's see here. So you've just been picking up with randos on Rocket League, or are you playing with, like, a group of people?
So I played a split screen with one of my friends back in Cincinnati. Mm. So, yeah.
So Ben, cool. I'm just saying, there's a lot of people on the Slack channel that for co-op that play Rocket League.
Ooh.
So you might want to look into teaming up.
Yeah.
All right. I might look into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could team up. Maybe even, you know, form a league.
Yeah. Form a Rocket League coalition. Yeah.
We could be Team Rocket League.
Yeah. You would use your rocket power.
We could be Rocket Men.
I want you to talk about your next game.
Yeah.
Speaking of rockets,
I want you to stop. Video games.
It's very nice to say I want you to stop talking about right now.
Stop the words that are coming out of your mouth, please. So in addition to video games, I've also been playing a couple different board games. So there are two I wanted to mention, but one of them, going back to Cincinnati, I kind of shared a couple different board games with a couple different friends, but one of the games was Betrayal on House on the Hill, which is like a spooky thematic game where it's kind of like Clue, where you're exploring a house. And then the cool aspect of it is halfway through the game, one person becomes a betrayer and then they control a monster and they're trying to kill the other players, and everyone kind of gangs up against that person. So
that sounds badass.
Yeah, and we tried to make it thematic, so we turned off the lights and turned on candles, and then a few of us had cell phones that we were using as flashlights to play the game. So it was a lot of fun. And then in addition to that, one game that I played with Cole was Twilight Struggle. And so for anybody who's into board games, this is the number one board game ranked on Board Game Geek, and it's a Cold War simulator.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. So tried to make it more thematic, where we had a Russian Imperial Stout, or close enough, and an American Farmhouse Ale, or close enough.
Yeah. So the beer is fantastic. This game is great.
Yeah.
I had a really good time, and you were very gracious about walking me through it and even helping me make better decisions with the way I played. And I think that's the only reason that I won.
Mm-hmm.
But yep.
Crushed it on his first try. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were very generous. But you know, it wasn't about the victory. It was about experiencing this really cool, very well balanced 2-player board game, which this is the, you know, I'm not that experienced with complicated board games like this. Like, we talked about the XCOM game a little while back. But yeah, this is great. And, you know, we had a couple of different conversations just about the way it seems kind of balanced to kind of match the flow of history a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the way it works, yeah, there's 10 different rounds in the game, and you have three different stages in the game. There's early war, mid war, and late war. And then what that entails is during early war, you only play with cards that have events that happen during that time period. And then likewise with mid war and late war. And basically all the cards will affect the different influence that each the US and the USSR have on the world. So every country has influence that the US or the USSR can place there.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to that, there's a couple other mechanics. There's like a DEFCON status where based on if you like coup other countries that the other player has, you can lower the DEFCON status. And if it ever drops to the lowest level, then whoever did that loses the game because they triggered nuclear war.
Mm-hmm. Because they got nuked out of existence more than the other guy got nuked out of existence.
Yeah, I mean, emphasis on mutual.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. What else is there to say about it, Cole?
I don't know. I just like it. I was playing the Soviets, so I felt like I really had a lot of advantages in the early going. And when we brought out, you know, when we shuffled in the mid war cards, I started noticing like, oh, I'm just not getting the fringe benefits of history when I'm playing these, or I'm making very tough decisions between, you know, do I play this card? Because when you play a card, you either, you know, if each of them is aligned with one side or the other, if you play a card that is not aligned toward you, for the operations point, the event still happens. So go ahead.
So if Cole playing as Russia played like a US event, then he would get operation points for whatever the card is. So he could use that to place influence on the board, but the event would happen as well. Mm-hmm. And so that would somehow favor me.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And like your total score is affected by like which like how much influence you have in different in different continents, and you actually have a choice of when you play the scorecard for those different continents, and the scoring is handled in this tug of war kind of fashion. So mm-hmm. you know it's kind of like net score as opposed to just kind of like everybody trying to reach a total. So all gains are, you know, made at the expense of your opponent, and like it's fantastic because each round you're going back and forth, and there's what feels like a lot of drama, but the net result isn't nearly as huge as you would have expected it to have been based on what you saw inside of it.
And it totally reinforces the theme of it being the Cold War. Yeah. So both players will spend all of their cards to place influence in like Europe, for example, then you'll score it and then no one gets any points.
You just escalated the situation.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that by. That was really fun.
I had a good time. Yeah,
sounds really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's two players too. Like that seems totally manageable, and like none of it felt incredibly complicated. Like setup wasn't that huge. Like that's a big deal for me. Like yeah, it just seems, you know, doable.
Now is this game two player only, or can it accommodate more people?
It is two player only. But there are very few good two-player games as far as board games go. So this is kind of an anomaly.
Okay, I'll have to keep this in mind.
Yeah.
That and, well, I guess Love Letters is not specifically two-player.
I've got a buddy at work who just got Love Letters. He has really good things to say about it, yeah.
I will also throw in a small note. I did play Love Letter with Bob, Therese, and Jen. That's for you, Dennis. But yeah.
Oh, cool, yeah. What was that? Four total people playing?
Yeah. We only played one round, but they liked it. But yeah.
That had to have gone like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
You had to spend more time explaining the game than you did actually playing it.
Yeah, it went by quick. But...
For those listening and not familiar, a round in Love Letter is super short.
Especially if you can get people out.
Yeah, depending on the way cards fall, it can end almost instantly. Oh, well.
Huh.
Cool.
So I'll go into mine because I have some overlap. Like I feel like I've said everything I need to say about Twilight Struggle, except to say that it's really fun and I encourage people to try it.
Yeah.
The only other game I've played, so I'm in the middle of August Hell with not just the JRPG, but also with replaying all of Dark Souls 2. for the Scholar of the First Sin episode, so pretty head down on that. But I did pick up last week Everybody's Gone to the Rapture.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, So this is the new game for the PlayStation 4 that's been developed by the Chinese Room. And also by Sony Santa Monica. I think they have some involvement in that. But the Chinese Room, specifically being the team behind Dear Esther and Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs, you know, the kind of some of the pioneers of the walking simulator, as it is pejoratively called. And
both games that are close to your heart, right?
Yeah, I like both of them a lot. I like Dear Esther a little bit more than Amnesia Machine for Pigs, but I am an Amnesia Machine for Pigs apologist, just because, I don't know, I think it's cool if you go into it expecting it to be more of a Chinese Room game than an Amnesia game.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is a Chinese Room-ass Chinese Room game. So the premise, if you can't tell from the title, is you are wandering around this town after some horrible incident that has kind of whisked everybody away. And this is a beautiful void in the way of like a Myst game. And so this is, I believe it's like an English village kind of place. Forgive me if I get my Britons mixed up. I believe it's English based on everybody's accents, but what do I know? Regardless, it looks like something I saw in an Edgar Wright movie, so I will hold it to that.
Were there a lot of cuts?
And a lot of ice cream wrappers everywhere. But yeah, so you're wandering around. I believe it takes place in like in the early 80s, something like that.
Before like cell phones.
Yes. And you're kind of wandering around trying to piece together what is happening. So you have two things. You have these radios that are the that are littered about, where you're getting these broadcasts from a woman named Kate who worked at this observatory, and they're seeing all of these weird phenomena that are, you know, kind of taking place alongside these kind of like this government quarantine and people bleeding out their noses and everybody dying and disappearing. You know, I'm very early on in the game, so this isn't really in the spoiler territory. Something has gone horribly wrong, and you're using these broadcasts and kind of phone transmissions along with these weird little anomalies, like these markers that are left, where they're like these floating motes of light that when you get close to them, you don't quite see a scene play out, but you see like the spirals of light that take roughly the form of people, you know, that are placed in the world. So somebody will be like standing up on the stairs and talking, and you have to kind of like follow them around the house as they are kind of not just talking about the event that's taken place, but the way that that everybody kind of fits together. So there's a bunch of characters. You're basically seeing the whole immediate history of this town as it's held in situ, and watching all of these, just kind of seeing the aftermath of this stuff. And there's no bodies, but there are, you know, just kind of like evidence of people leaving their things. And so it's very much that personal archaeology gone home style of thing I really enjoy.
Nice. So I have two questions. One, how are the walking physics?
Pretty slow. There's a sprint button, but it doesn't do much. That said, I'm usually looking at the pretty graphics, or, you know, just kind of like admiring the loving detail on most of the buildings and cars and things. So that doesn't really bother me too much. And, you know, the density of cool things to look at is enough for me. It's not as frustrating as like Dear Esther, where you can go like all the way down what appears to be a dead end. So you have to like double back.
Yeah. And second question is, how heavily do they lean into the rapture aspect of it?
There's some religious figures in the plot, but right now it mostly seems to be scientific. I don't think that this is like a Left Behind kind of thing. In fact, I'm not really convinced that the character that I'm playing as is even a physical being.
Hmm. My question was going to be about managing the space. So like Gone Home is a very tight experience. Literally, like, you have to unlock doors and rooms one by one, and the entirety of that map is just one house. It's very compact. Whereas the impression I got from Everyone's Gone to the Rapture is that it plays out kind of really open-ended over an entire town. How does that change the experience, and how well do they manage that kind of way wider distance that you have to cover?
So it's pretty cool. As you're moving from kind of set piece to set piece or different kind of neighborhoods in the town, you're kind of, you start with one person's story and then you see the way that that interacts with the people who are down the street from them.
Okay.
Kind of like a book I've been working my way through for a while, Life, a User's Manual by Georges Perec, which is kind of describing the stories of the inhabitants of an apartment by looking at all of their things and telling the story of the things that are inside of them. So it is not as dense and is probably not as like intricately and masterfully put together as Gone Home is in terms of like story per square foot. In the incidental details and everything.
Sure.
But it is a big town that is a bunch of kind of half implemented, not as dense Gone Homes, you know, strung together like that, with, you know, more characters in play and kind of more seemingly more intricate relationships between them, but not quite as deep, where you're actually seeing like the story of the father going back to his childhood, you know. You get the sense that it's everybody's stories on the same day. But again, I don't really know what the timeline is.
Cool. I'm excited to see it play out for you.
Yeah. So it looks really good. I'm not really like that attached to it. Like I haven't reached that Dear Esther moment. Like, you know, there are a couple of moments where like Dear Esther really grabbed me, and just by the role of the story that I got and the way it all fit together, it was like, oh my gosh, this is so affecting, you know, up till the end where I was just bawling my eyes out. Like, mm-hmm. I haven't seen how all this ties together. At this point, it's just purely like interesting. I can't make like a blanket, this is worth your time to play, because A, I don't know how much time it takes to play, and B, I don't know if any of it pays off. Right now, it's an interesting, again, personal archaeology kind of experiment, which appeals to me and my particular proclivities, but I couldn't recommend this to somebody who tried either any of the Chinese Room's previous games and, you know, kind of fell flat with them.
Sure.
You know? It's just...
It's good. The Chinese Room doing what the Chinese Room does very well.
Yeah. Like this is like the Lullabies to Paralyze. Like if you weren't a Queens of the Stone Age fan, specifically a Josh Homme fan, I would not tell you to listen to Lullabies to Paralyze, especially if Songs for the Deaf didn't really do anything for you.
Huh.
Yeah. So yeah, that has been my series of games. So if there's nothing about that, then I will throw to let's go to you, Dennis.
Yeah, sure. I've got two that I've been playing, both heavily influenced by the Slack chat, oddly enough.
Nice.
So yeah, I grouped up with for some co-op with Alessio and with Jala. Based off of Slack discussions. The intent was to play Risk of Rain, but that game continues to be inscrutable. So even Alessio like kind of had figured it out before, kind of knew the type of things that you would have to do to fix it, and just even then we weren't able to make it work. So we audibled over to Broforce.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which is a fantastic little co-op game. So, you know, art style not dissimilar from Contra, play style not dissimilar from Contra, except you're playing as all the you know movie stars from action movies over the past 20 years, which is good for just some cheap laughs as you watch the characters unlock. One thing that I really appreciated about the game is that you can play the main story mode co-op from the beginning with people dropping in,
nice.
Which is, it's just accessibility wise is huge, because I think Jala had played some, and she had a bunch of the heroes unlocked. Neither I nor Alessio had you know unlocked anything yet, and just us being able to seamlessly group together, especially after the hardship of Risk of Rain, was a breath of fresh air. But kind of the gimmick of the game is every time you pick up a life, which you do by freeing a captive, you become a new hero, and so there's almost this kind of a risk reward element to it. It's fine if you don't like the hero that you've got, but if you've got a hero whose moveset you really like, you kind of have to make this trade-off between, okay, I want an extra life, but that means I'm going to get a randomized skill set next. And I don't know if I'll like it as much as what I have now. And on top of that, if you're playing co-op, you're kind of managing who needs the extra life, who should it go to, and that sort of thing on top of it at all. So, It's kind of a really nice little system within the game that I thought played really well with a bunch of people in the room.
Very nice.
It's definitely an empowerment fantasy. So you know you're just kind of shooting down wave upon wave upon wave of Mook who kind of are as likely to run away in terror as they are to do anything useful. And their art style is kind of wacky to match. You're fighting things like the terror tank and the terror copter, the terror copper. it's all terrorist themed stuff. There's some light puzzle elements that I was a little bit frustrated with. This almost felt like a game where the levels could have been randomly generated, but there were a bunch of sections where it's like, okay, you have to kind of know to jump down to this area and set off this, you know, explosion, and that'll clear things out for you. And otherwise, it's really unduly difficult. But for the most part, it's a game where you can just kind of turn off your brain and have fun shooting things with friends.
Yeah. I've actually played this a few times very briefly, but I don't know if I've talked about it or not. But yeah, it might be good to talk about some of the characters that you can be.
Sure. You almost have to go by the names, because some of the names are way better than others. So you've got like Rambro, obviously, the Broondock Saints, which is kind of amusing.
Is that like an Ice Climbers thing where one of you plays as Daryl from The Walking Dead and the other one plays that guy who never was anything else?
Sean Patrick Flannery.
Oh, yeah. I guess he wasn't other stuff. Sorry.
Yeah.
Wasn't he Powder?
I believe so.
Nice. That's the shtick of that character. So, you know, and they're all different. So, you know, Rambro is kind of your generic shoot guns, throw grenades. The Broondock Saints have the whole kind of second person aspect to where you can kind of almost die once and still keep on playing. So kind of a little extra life within a life. There is, what's the Mr. T name? I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head now.
Mr. Bro.
Maybe. But he's got a flamethrower.
Oh, B.A. Barakas.
B.A. Barakas?
B.A. Barakas.
There we go.
No, yep. that, I'm just taking a guess. I'm not sure.
No, I'm agreeing that is an excellent guess. So his analog has a flamethrower. There's Blade. I'm making these up now myself. There's a Blade type, which has a sword. And they're all kind of fun to play, except for Brogyver, which just throws dynamite and occasionally puts down a turkey with dynamite. Yeah, it makes about as much sense in games as it sounds right there.
Sorry, I'm just thinking about all of these. Like, there are some jokes that I get in my head that I want to tweet, but they're not going to scan and text. Mm-hmm. Which is a shame, because here's the tweet that I was going to put out, which is, my family was too poor to afford Animaniacs merchandise, so we had to settle for the Toonatics instead. Which is dumb, A, but also Toonatics reads as Toonatics when I wrote it out, so I just scrapped the whole thing. But sure, audio works fine.
So you tell it here. Yeah, actually, Cole, you're absolutely right. B.A. Barakas.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
You can also be like the bride from Kill Bill and Ripley.
The Brode.
Yes. From Alien.
Mm-hmm. And I think you can be Morpheus and Chuck Norris as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm. They're all, I'm looking at the list now, and it's there's got to be 30 heroes in here. So well, there's no shortage.
They also made, did you play any of, they made like a free expansion that was the Expendibros?
No, I haven't gotten that far yet.
They did, and like every fiber of my being wants to be like, that's kind of gross. But that's so appropriate for what they were trying to do that like it feels right. And even though it is like a marketing play, it's kind of like, oh, good for them. Like some big Hollywood person wanted to give them a bunch of money to basically make the game
they're making.
Yeah. So like good for them. Like I have no animosity for that.
Yeah, I mean it's a good fit. That's just it works. So yeah, that's it's been a lot of fun. We played, I think, the first four levels or something like that, and I look forward to going back to it. But I can't imagine playing it without co-op. So I'll always be doing it that way. But that also leads to my one complaint, is that it gets a little hard to keep track of yourself on the screen from time to time. And there was more than one occasion where it was like, oh, I'm dead? How long have I been dead? Mm-hmm. Or, oh, I'm still alive? Where am I? Like, it just kind of, the chaos gets a little extreme, especially given how destructible the levels are.
I call that the Smash Brothers problem, but I'm adult, and also I've never played 8-player Smash Brothers.
Also, it's pronounced Smash Bros, so yeah.
God damn it. I'm so fucking angry right now.
So let's try to diffuse that by transitioning to the next game.
Good.
But I had gotten in a discussion with a couple different people about kind of MOBAs being something that I admired from afar with the International, but kind of I'm like, I'll never have time to actually, you know, sit down for a solid 40-minute chunk and commit to a team. And people pointed out, like, hey, try Heroes of the Storm. It's kind of bite-sized MOBAs. Mm-hmm. So I downloaded that and played. I already had the kind of launcher for it, I guess, through Hearthstone. and I enjoyed it. I'm not sure exactly what it was that I enjoyed, but I think I enjoyed it. I think I did moderately good at it.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
Did the game know that you were new to it, and did they do anything to try and ease your kind of like return velocity into it?
Yeah, they were very sensitive to that. And I was pleasantly surprised with how good it was. So right when I logged in for the first time, there was kind of a question with how familiar are you with games like this?
Okay.
And it was all the way from like none to experienced, and there was a couple settings in between. So you kind of like pick your background.
None familiar.
None familiar. That was me as well. And so it walked me through a very extensive tutorial, kind of single player away from everyone else, to kind of just get the basics of the game down. And then even after you get out of that, which does a pretty good job with teaching you the ropes, at least for the mechanics of the game, in terms of the whole metagame of, you know, powerful hero matchups or combinations and how to team together, it doesn't scrape the surface of that. But as many times as you want, you can do a single-player game. That it just pairs you with AI opponents, which was cool.
That's good.
Yeah, but so, you know, after the tutorial and one run against AI, I decided to jump in. That's what MOBAs are for, after all. and just got annihilated my first game. Had no idea what I was doing. Died way, way too frequently. And often with no clue as to why.
Did you play against people?
Played against people, yeah.
Oh, no.
How dare you play this multiplayer game?
Yeah, playing against other actual people is like elite-level MOBA.
Yeah, it was...
You don't do that till you've been playing for years.
I contradict that, though, because I came back my second game and just freaking wiped the floor with the other team. So I won't credit myself too much with being a quick learner, and I'll credit it more to it's a very accessible game. But the thing I was talking with people about was towards the end of the first game, I was at least starting to think this will probably get me killed before I got myself killed.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is progress, you know, that counts for something.
Developing instincts.
Yeah. Even if that instinct is just, bad things.
I mean, that's the basic instinct, right? I mean, you know, what's her name? Sharon Stone on crossing her legs. Huh.
So, I like I said, the second game I came in and kind of picked a lane, stayed in it. There was another person who was kind of, we were working together. So I kind of lucked into a good teammate and just absolutely dominated to where, but I felt like I didn't just happen to be on a good team. It was like me and one other person in this lane working together. And I could really see my efforts swinging the tide of the overall battle, all playing out in about the span of 15 to 20 minutes, which is perfect for me.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. This is basically Blizzard Smash Brothers, right? Like you've got Kerrigan going against the Lost Vikings.
Exactly. Yep. And I think the way that they do the free-to-play model is pretty elegant, too. It's at any given time, there are 5 free-to-play characters that they rotate out of a cast of probably like 40. So you can always play the game for free if you're willing to, you know, take whatever random character happens to be available that week. And eventually you'll get a chance to play everyone. But if you find a character that you really like, or if you want to be playing consistently on a team and have a character that you know you can have access to, that's where you can purchase.
See, I actually really didn't like that model. That's what like League of Legends does. Okay. And because it seemed like it's like, oh, better hope that, yo, at least one of these characters is rated beginner.
Sure, yeah. Which I have to imagine they control for that.
Yeah.
And if not, yeah, that'd be very disappointing. I was fortunate enough, I think two of them were rated beginner, but I haven't gotten enough bravery to venture beyond the starter character yet.
I mean, so can you envision a world in which you pay them money?
That's tough. This is the good kind of free to play in that I'm never renting access to a character, right?
Yeah.
If I lay down money for it, I'm guaranteed to get what I'm paying for, which I feel way better about than the, you know, the standard free to play model of like, oh, you can pay for 12 hours of access or 3 charges of this weapon.
Yeah.
It also is a step up for me from Hearthstone, where it's like, hey, I'm paying for a digital card pack that may or may not have anything worthwhile in it. Which, you know, some of that just comes along with the nature of a collectible card game, so I'm not going to begrudge it too much. So this is like the best form of free-to-play that I can imagine. And if I get the right community around it to play with it, which I know a couple people in person and over the Slack who play, so who knows what'll happen, I could see myself investing. I've almost been kind of toying around with the idea of like, man, is like this and Hearthstone going to become like 80% of the games that I play? And I don't like the idea of that. And that's something where I feel like there's so much more out there. I'm not ready to like zero in on that. And I feel like starting to invest real money in these games would be me kind of making more of a dodge that way, even though that's insane because it's, you know, $2.
Yeah. Is it to get a new hero? So I'm looking at the site here and it's like, I'm really boring. So I want to play as Rainer cause I like Rainer as a character. Mm-hmm. I can't get a feeling for how much it costs because his cost isn't listed. Like what's the order of magnitude?
Oh no. Let's see here.
On the website. Is... Like I'm not, you know, okay, it may yeah, be I'm something on, they don't want to change.
Yeah. I'm on the Wikipedia and the price for him. So $4.
$4.
$3.99.
That seems reasonable. Like for me to play as Rainer because I want to play as Rainer. But
yeah, and its in-game price is 2,000 gold, which I think I'm already above that. And I haven't invested it because that's the character I'm playing as. He's kind of the beginner character.
Oh, is he? Oh, wow. Yeah. I really am basic, aren't I?
Yeah. Jumped you right in there. But no, I mean, like, he could just be that because that's the rotation that I happen to be joined. I don't know. But you know, I've already earned 2,000 gold and could spend it on him, or there are several other heroes that are cheap like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's kind of a game that'll let you. I think in game you can probably unlock enough characters to play casually. If you want to start really getting serious about playing on a team and that sort of thing, I imagine you would have to start plopping down money just to know you can have the heroes that you want.
Yeah. Sure.
Can two players play the same hero?
I have seen the same hero on an opposite team. Mm-hmm. So I've had Rainer versus Rainer, provided over by the offices of Spider-Man. And
I love that joke. Well, you would have to be able to play at least opposing somebody who had the same character as on your team because if there are only 5 free to play characters at a time.
Yeah.
Well, that was the other thing. Like, I'm pretty sure you can't do that in League of Legends, and that's the other thing I remember. It's like there being issues where it's like there would be. Yo, you had to buy more than one character because you had to have your backup.
Oh, you'd get locked out.
Right. And
no, so the way it
don't
works.
Don't quote me on that. This is from like I had a very short and very unillustrious League of Legends career.
Yeah. The way it works is you choose the character you want to play as, and then you hit join game.
Okay, that's cool.
It matches you that way. Which, in retrospect, if I am playing as like the beginner vanilla character, that would explain why I had longer than average wait times to get into a match. When I played, it was like 2 minutes ish, average. It said the average was 70 seconds.
Yeah, that's probably. I mean, that is a smart way for them to monetize it, because if you want to play as something super rare that nobody has, then it's going to be easier for you to. I like that. Yeah. I don't know that I like it, but like it seems effective to me.
So I think it's an elegant way to handle if they won't allow multiple people on one team. I don't know if they would have designed it imagining that would incentivize people to buy new characters. That's just me connecting the dots on what might be going on in the matchmaking background.
Happy accidents.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I've been playing. And both games that I have kind of light experience with and we'll look forward to coming back to.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, I'm curious to hear how your relationship with that evolves, with the one caveat being that we cannot talk about that every week if it becomes a regular fixture for you.
I do it with Hearthstone and XCOM, so this will just add a bit of variety to the mix.
There's something about hearing MOBA stories, and you hear a couple of them. It edges into the territory of hearing somebody describe their dreams, which is cool. I understand that means a lot to you, but it becomes difficult.
Someone describe their dreams, by which I mean like the premise of at least some of this our multiplayer.
Maybe. I mean, you don't dream with a bunch of other people. Like, you're not in a dream cooperative.
You're not inceptioned.
I got kicked out.
Kicked. That's good. Yeah, Inception. Yeah.
Kicked out. Damn it! You beat me there. Yeah.
That wasn't really a joke. I was just acknowledging that both of those statements matched. If anything, David made the joke, and I just underlined it.
Joke is David's.
Yes, David. You played anything?
Not honestly, not a whole lot. I was out of town over the weekend, so I was kind of running around getting ready for that. Still a little bit of Dying Light. Pretty much all I have to say is the good news is my character has stopped being an idiot. So hopefully the storyline will continue with him not being an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. I did play a little bit yesterday. I went did a dinner with some friends, and we played a board game called Flashpoint, which is basically like a firefighter simulator.
Huh.
Yeah, so like each person plays a member of a firefighter team, and there's basic rules where everyone is just just basically the same. But we played the more advanced rules where basically each person has a role. So you have a certain number of action points per round, and different classes can do different things. So like one of them is a rescue like search and rescue specialist. So they get 3 free moves that don't each round that don't count towards their action points. Or you're going and searching for these like points of interest, which ideally will be people to save, but sometimes there's false alarms. So one of the other classes is a imaging technician that can spend an action point to reveal whether or not a point of interest anywhere on the map is a false alarm. So it's things like that. So it's really cool. And then basically kind of the flow of the game is, you do your events and then you move around a grid. And after each turn, you roll a die to pick a grid square that the fire will spread to. And then if the grid square rolled already contains fire, it causes a explosion, which basically spreads fire in a plus sign, because apparently this world operates on Bomberman rules.
Yeah, sure.
Or Final Fantasy Tactics rules. I mean, come on.
Right, yeah, yeah. And if it hits a wall, it causes structural damage, and the game ends once enough structural damage has been done.
Hmm.
So it's kind of a cool game. We lost pretty badly because we misread the rules, and it's supposed to be a plus. Explosions happen in a plus sign of like one space. We initially read them as they keep exploding a plus sign until they hit a wall.
Oh, wow.
So we decided halfway through to, one, switch to the right rules, and two, that we were apparently, you know, saving a family of terrorists that had, you know, stashed, you know, C4 all over their house. So overall seems like a pretty cool game. This is maybe the first of the kind of more sophisticated co-op multiplayer board games I've ever played.
Hmm.
So that was kind of a cool experience. So hopefully next time we play, we, you know, won't kill everyone.
Nice.
No promises though.
I did enjoy what, like the fact that you have to save seven people, I believe it is, but if more than four people die, there's then not enough potential rescues to save seven people, so the game ends.
Hmm.
So I love the fact that apparently you're like, oh yeah, well we did say. We did save four people, so I guess screw the rest of the people. You gotta cut our losses.
The shame is too much.
I mean, this sounds much better than the Backdraft board game, which usually doesn't even start because everybody's arguing over who gets to be Kurt Russell and who has to be Billy Baldwin. I'm sorry, David, I engineered a joke that you couldn't get.
No.
Oh, the game mechanic is you open a bunch of doors over and over.
Yep. It's like Hotel Mario.
Yeah, I at least recognize Kurt Russell. I mean,
not even the Baldwin.
One sec, let me. Yes, it's Escape from New York.
Yep, there we go. The Thing. He's in one of your favorite movies.
Yes, I was gonna say. So he's been in two of my favorite movies. So
yeah.
Do you guys wanna name your favorite Kurt Russell movies? Tango and Cash, Overboard. Anyone?
Oh, also Big Trouble in Little China.
Captain
Basically,
Rod.
I think I like everything he's been in.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, it has to be The Thing, right?
Yeah. The Thing would be mine.
It has to be The Thing. I don't know that I have any questions about that. I mean, Ben, you have more experience with the board games than I do. Like, is this something you've played? Is this something you have questions about?
I haven't played this one, and I also have not played the board game that was mentioned earlier. Kemmel?
Yep.
Kemet. Hmm. So, I'd be interested in trying out both of those.
Nice. Huh. Well, yeah, David, do you have anything else?
No, that's it.
Cool. Do you all want to button it up?
Yeah, let's button it up.
Cool. The credit. Well, yeah, thank you so much for listening to level number 117. We are just trucking, guys. We just keep on going on.
We didn't even mention Halo this episode.
117?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
That's Master Chief. He's Spartan 117, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Well, mentioned it now.
Yeah, I guess my only Halo number that I know is 343, but that's a couple years off.
Yep, we're halfway there almost. Yeah.
So thank you everybody so much for listening. We made a couple of references to the Slack channel, and boy oh boy, is that a good time. Just watching people kind of talk with each other and share cool jokes and upload emojis. Like, it is a big dumb chat room, but it is full of smart and funny people. So it kind of balances out. Let's see here. So yeah, that's the way you get involved with that is to go to our Patreon page. That is patreon.com/thelevelpodcast. And yeah, I really encourage you to do that. Just talk with us. We have a channel for The Level, and people are talking about games and stuff.
Yep, I'm usually not too far away from checking that at any given time. So
nice. And other than that, like, leave us some ratings or reviews. It's been a little while since we've gotten one. And we really would like to see that happen, because whenever we get one, we tend to show up in the rankings for like a second and then it goes away. So that is a fantastic way to help us out if you don't have any, you know, extra scratch to throw away. Also, if you want to go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar and use the affiliate link there, all of that goes towards helping pay the expenses for the network. And it doesn't cost you anything extra. We just get a little cut from that. Is there anything that I'm missing?
Well, with the tip jar, they have to use the Amazon link for them to not pay anything.
Yes, there we go. That's what I mean. that's primarily what I direct them to the tip jar for. So, Yeah. Also, I forgot that Kurt Russell played Wyatt Earp in Tombstone, which I am ashamed. I am just deadly ashamed that I forgot that. So no. I need to hide my face, because okay. Tombstone is great.
Bounce Luckily, back. It's a podcast.
Oh man, I don't edit for content. You know that. I edit for hiccups occasionally.
I meant you're already hiding your face. I would never suggest we lessen your shame. Just yeah.
Did you throw some hiccup flags down, Cole?
I threw like one or two. Like it All just right. I don't know. Like that dumb thing somebody said made me laugh so hard that it gave me them. So I don't want to hide that.
So it occurs to me, if scratch is slang for money, does that mean that old money is old scratch?
Is old scratch like a name for the devil?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, just it's been lying around. You know, it's in your piggy. The devil's in your piggy's is in your piggy bank stomach. There we go. So yeah, I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been known to be David Meyersmith at Meyersmith777 on Twitter.
And I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around, because boy, oh boy, are there a lot of titles.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to read mine, and I want anybody who has any to share them with me so I can add them to the list. The Tipperang. Decisions Made at the Head. Bring Me a Lot of Moons. The Fourth Z.
What was that one from?
I forget. I just wrote it down.
Probably around the time we were doing Goblins.
Oh, or, yeah, probably. Yeah. Old Man Orgasms.
Oh, God. I feel like that one is another one that's based in the pronunciation.
Yeah, probably.
I think Old Man Orgasms is just good no matter what medium you see it in. Except for a few.
It catches a... except for Lemon Party. No, we're still going, guys. The 90s Didn't Happen All at Once. And None Familiar.
Even though I don't think it's the most pertinent to the show, I think Old Man Orgasms is pretty funny.
Okay, so we have one vote for Old Man Orgasms.
The only one I would submit is Throwing Down the Hiccup Flag.
Go through them again one more time.
Okay, The Tipperang. Decisions Made at the Head. Bring Me Lots of Moons. The Fourth Z. Old Man Orgasms. The 90s Didn't Happen All at Once. None Familiar. Throwing Down the Hiccup Flag.
What is None Familiar from?
Talking about the familiarity with MOBAs.
Oh, yes.
Dennis, how do you feel?
I nothing's popping to me more than Old Man Orgasms.
I just have to see if like iTunes rejects that.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Would that be something that guy?
They would probably just put an asterisk in. It's fine. We had an episode of Those Damn Ross Kids called Piss Dragons. So
wait, what did they do with asterisks?
they will censor episode titles by putting asterisks in. Instead of actually like making it so it doesn't publish, so it's not a problem.
So it'll be like old man stars.
It'll probably be like old man org starsums.
That's like the least meaningful. That's not even censoring.
They censored piss by asterisking out the I. So
I love that people think that makes it better.
I know, right?
Whatever gets the whiny people to stop complaining.
It's like when you watch like Comedy Central and they blank out hole but not ass.
Yeah.
So
he was totally talking about a donkey.
David, do you have any a dissenting opinion on old man orgasms?
Orgasms, but not about for them the or against them.
Yeah, I'm against them, but not opposed to the title.
Everybody deserves to be happy.